1 year after the Supreme Court's controversial and narrow 5-4 ruling, which overturned a key section of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, nearly half the states across the country have imposed new obstacles to voting. These include restrictive voter ID laws, limiting early voting hours, and new requirements making voter registration more difficult. These election regulations, ushered in by mostly Republican governors and legislatures since 2010, disproportionately affect the voting rights of minorities, young people, senior citizens, and other voters viewed as likely to cast ballots for Democratic Party candidates. Unless successfully challenged, these new restrictions will be in place in 22 states for the important midterm congressional elections this November 4th. Already, voting rights advocates have initiated lawsuits to overturn restrictive election regulations in 7 states. In a hopeful sign, a federal judge in Milwaukee struck down Wisconsin's voter identification law on April 29th, declaring that a requirement that voters show a state-issued photo ID at the polls imposes an unfair burden on poor and minority voters. Although the Voting Rights Amendment Act of 2014 was introduced in January, Congress has thus far failed to pass this legislation, which would restore the preclearance section of the Voting Rights Act struck down by the Supreme Court last year. Your reporter spoke with Tomas Lopez, counsel with the Brennan Center for Justice, who discusses the status of challenges to new voter suppression laws across the nation and the likely impact on voters.
One big lawsuit that some of your listeners may have heard about concerns the photo ID law in Wisconsin. And earlier this year, federal court actually ruled against that law. And in his decision, the judge wrote the law would actually prevent more legitimate votes from being cast than fraudulent votes. So that's one example of a law, you know, that we think is a really problematic one, one that's restrictive, but that the courts have actually taken a really positive step with. Also earlier this year, there was a state court that ruled against the voter ID law in Arkansas, and that's an ongoing concern. Another two laws that your listeners might also have heard about are in Texas and in North Carolina. Texas has a strict photo ID law that only allows certain people to vote only if they have certain kinds of identification. And so the state's own early estimates showed that between 600,000 and 800,000 voters did not have the kind of ID required there, and that Latinos were 46 to 120% more likely to lack an ID than white voters. And those were just early estimates. That case is going to trial later this year. In North Carolina, the state legislature last year passed one of the country's most restrictive voting laws. It cut back on early voting. It also got rid of a provision allowing citizens to register to vote on Election Day. And the litigation there is also ongoing.
So it's unclear, really, I guess, how many of these restrictive voting laws will be in place when voters go to the polls this November. It'll be up to these individual courts. What is the likelihood that some of these cases could be decided before the Supreme Court in terms of the challenges to these restrictive laws?
Well, I mean, certainly this is an issue that has a lot of meaning around the nation. This is something that we think matters in all 50 states. I don't know that I'm in the position to say which of these cases is going to reach the Supreme Court or if or when the Supreme Court is actually going to take them. But we obviously think this is this is an issue of the highest importance.
Tomas, is there any reliable estimate on the numbers of voters who may not get a chance to cast a ballot this November because of these laws?
Well, I don't know that I could give you an aggregate number. You know, what we know is that really large swaths of the population can be affected by restrictive laws in one way or another. To give you one example, North Carolina last year passed a law that restricted early voting. It narrowed the window. Simply looking at the data, you see that early voting was something that was really popular among African-American voters. You know, the concern about these laws is that they can particularly affect members of minority groups, students, the elderly. And we really are worried about what can happen if they're allowed to fully go into effect.
So no numbers, but, I've heard estimates that hundreds of thousands, certainly numbers that could change the results of elections if particular voters don't have their votes counted.
And as I mentioned, we looked at those early numbers from Texas that estimated in the high hundreds of thousands, and again, early estimates, that talked about the numbers of individuals that lacked ID. We when we look at this information, I mean, what we see is that these are laws that do have consequences, and that we're doing our best to actually make sure that people are able to vote. You know, what we want is a system in every state and across the country where voting is free, fair, and accessible. And we think those laws cut against that in a way that really cuts against our democratic principles.
It is so hard to get your head around the fact that one political party would want to restrict potentially millions of people from voting, and then being able to get away with it without the public outcry that I would expect is a really concerning, you know, part of the public reaction to this whole thing. And I know certainly at the Brennan Center and political activists, this is a real issue, you know, at the top of the list. But for the vast majority in the country, it's really not high on the agenda. And at least from where I'm sitting, and I'm probably you too, it should be more on the radar screen of most people.
You know, I think you bring up a really important point, and that's that the right to vote should be above partisanship. You know, every citizen's got this right, and you know, these efforts to make voting more difficult, more complicated, they cut against who we are. And to the extent that affected voters are more likely to vote one way or another, it doesn't justify those restrictions. This is how the public expresses its preferences. This is how we get to determine the people who make our policies. And it's really important for people to know that there are also really good things that can happen with voting, that we can take steps to make things like early voting more available, to modernize the system of voter registration, to make the voting process more user-friendly. And these are the things that Congress and our state legislature should be focusing on. I think that one thing that is really heartening to come out of this process is that we're seeing people stand up and fight back. We're seeing people who are willing to stand up and defend the right to vote. You know, we've seen Moral Monday in North Carolina. We've seen around the country these lawsuits take action, and we've also seen people simply register to vote and then, if necessary, wait in line for hours to vote to make sure that their voice is heard. You know, I do think in the face of all of this, it's important to remember that people aren't necessarily being passive in response.
That was Tomas Lopez, counsel with the Brennan Center for Justice. For more information on the campaign to restore and strengthen voting rights across the U.S., visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.